All right, full house. All the fellas here. Sam McKee came in studio. What's up, buddy?
Good morning.
You look pensive.
He caught me out of my rhythm. I'm up before the crack 8:30 here for the first time in a month. So at 3 to 5 life, buddy. Pretty good one.
Yeah, you did tell me that your morning routine is scroll TikTok for an hour in bed.
Social media, it's toxic.
Yeah.
The amount of social media I do before I get out of bed is not good.
I'm so glad that I never did the talk.
Oh, because you'd be me.
Yeah.
You'd be a full-blown
I know I'm addicted to it.
But the problem is, you're always like, hey, check this out on Instagram. No. I'm like, I saw this on the talk like 6 weeks ago.
I'm so
JD's that guy.
Here's the thing. I can handle it when the youths hammer me about that, right? Yeah. When I shoot that to someone, because in this industry, you know.
I'm at least 2 years younger than you, buddy. I'm a youth to you.
Oh, yeah. You're a youth, yeah.
To you?
No.
Not amongst this youth.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Point
he's 22 years old. That's not even, it's like, if I got to think about being 22 now, I got to focus. I got to be like, okay, what was going on? And then how many years after high school was that? You got to lock in. You know, you can't just remember 22 off the top of your head.
I don't remember anything about my 20s.
He's the same age as Scotty Barnes.
I don't remember last week.
I think I'm older than Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, maybe that's true. You and Scotty Barnes are hanging out though, and you can relate.
Yeah, that's true.
Same generation.
Yeah,
I don't know if we can relate, but
yeah, I don't know. You could relate. You're also, you know, but here's the difference between you and Scotty Barnes. If you ever showed me up publicly, I'd murder you. I would not be at a podium going, "That's my boy. It's cool." It would just be your family getting flowers. That's it.
I'm on a T-shirt.
Yeah, you would be absolutely done. There's no way.
What happened there?
Okay, you didn't see the John Boy.
I saw the clip. I didn't see the John Boy. I admit to everyone here, I'm a Leaf guy now. I watch Leafs every night. I have a really hard time with the Raps this year. They're a tough watch. And the fact that I don't have to do it now, like it's not like it's a needed thing when I was hosting more general shows and talking about the Raps. Like I've really checked out from them. And I feel bad because I'm a Raps fan. I've always been a Raps fan. But it's just this season, it's
brutal.
Tough watch. It's been really tough watch.
Dude, it's awful.
I've been checked out.
And the worst part about it is that there's still, I understand it from a coverage standpoint. You can't just be going tank, 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 everybody tank.
No, tank, tank, tank.
But there is just,
when I'm not in it, I'm like,
no, but
lose every game.
Yeah, but that's the thing. There's just like this kind of weird disconnect that's happening right now around some of the narratives where people are talking about this team going, oh, and then it's a good turnaround. They've got this second half schedule. And you're going, no. There's no point here.
No, get rid of the good guys.
Yeah, trade some guys and be bad. They've got these two games coming up against Charlotte.
They're huge.
Man, Toronto's not out of the mix of the bottom four, which is what you need to be in.
I was like, oh, man, they're down there.
They could get into the bottom four. And so that Portland win, just pretending like it was good. Scotty Barnes did this, and Fred, I went, this is a horrible nightmare. You want them to lose every single game right now. Anybody with half a brain. Anyway, the Barnes thing, John Boy, who is just the man, if you don't follow
really,
him.
He's really, really good.
He started off with just doing baseball breakdowns, then he realized that it's lucrative for him to do it in all sports. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of his best ones are when he trends into the hockey world, into sports where there's more cussing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or he does sports that people don't even know exist.
Yeah,
those are the ones that go crazy.
His account is perfect, but he just automatically put together the Barnes Thad Young one. Mm-hmm. And it actually really did de-escalate it pretty quickly because it's just Thad Young going, I'm trying to get you ready, and him going, I'm ready. And then it's kind of him being dismissive and two guys. I don't think it's that big of a deal in isolation, right? I don't think that those two guys arguing it publicly, it's a little worse because if you think about it, that doesn't happen every day in the NBA, right? So when people go, oh, that's just teammates, I'm like, well, kind of, but I watch a lot of NBA. I watch a lot of sports. It's not like before every game there's two guys arguing with each other publicly.
Is that before the game or at half?
No, can't remember. It was before the game,
I thought it was half. But anyways, doesn't matter.
Anyway, they're, bitching at each other. And he's like, basically, Barnes is, get out of my face, old man. Mm-hmm. Thad Young's contract and trade looks great, by the way. He had a couple moments in the playoffs. They won't even play him. And he's a contract.
That was awful trade.
Oh, it doesn't look great right now. You know what's weird, though? I like watching Thad Young a lot of nights.
First round pick for him.
Yeah,
why did they do that?
But the way that everyone talks is they traded back in the draft.
Still.
Yeah, they got Koloko.
Yeah.
I don't know how much better they would have gotten
the guy that broke up the altercation.
Yeah, it's true.
It was weird. It was Bo Cruz, who's never hit a shot. I've
yet to see Hernan Gomez hit a three.
I am so devastated that he stinks because I watched that incredible movie, Hustle.
I know, it's awesome.
Hustle?
No, the movie's changed for everybody in Raptors. And like, you can never not see him.
Like, why this guy's going to be Bo Cruz. No. And then he's just like, he stinks.
But why couldn't he just stay in an irrelevant market where we never saw him so that he could just remain Bo Cruz in our minds?
This myth or something
like that. Yeah, because now he is not Bo Cruz. You can't separate him from him missing every shot with the Raptors. Seriously, just one time hit an open three. It's like, Bo Cruz, wide open for three. Oh, he missed by 3 feet. Okay, great. What a pickup. And he plays anyway. The Raptors, this is what I do think is a bigger deal about it. Barnes has clearly had just this weird season where he's been criticized about not, he's gotten it from a lot of different angles. Raptors Twitter and Raptors fans have really tried to do the whole progress isn't linear thing. And I get it. I'm there too. Do I think Barnes is probably going to be fine over the course of his career? Yeah. You see it and you've seen it lately where if he drives, there's not too many guys that can stop him from getting to his spot. And then once he gets to that spot, which is around the basket, 2 feet in the paint, as I always say, he's got that little baby hook that it goes in all the time. It's a devastatingly effective move. His defense has been a huge issue this year, like just massive. He's not played it. Yeah. And I know that's not a main point of focus for a lot of people, but when people look at why the Raptors have taken a step back, the guy that was supposed to defend every single position, yeah, that like has not worked out for him whatsoever. Anyway, throughout the course of the year, it became a little bit of, hey, was this guy doing enough during the offseason? What's going to happen here? What's up with the attitude? He's had some really tough moments. Like I mentioned the game that I was at, the courtside game against the Grizzlies, where he gets barely poked and he goes off the floor in the middle of the play, goes to the tunnel, comes back 2 seconds later, and then is like bitching out a ref in front of everybody, angry, like he's...
Well, that's the ref's favorite thing to do. I mean, the ref's favorite thing to do.
Well, yeah.
Just scream at the ref
all the time now.
Yeah, it hasn't been a great year for Barnes, okay? But the main thing is like, he does represent the future of the Raptors, right? And so you can be patient with Scottie Barnes. That's not how Pascal Siakam feels in his prime season. Mm-hmm. That's not how Thad Young probably feels in year 16 or whatever of his career. It's certainly not how Fred VanVleet feels. Every time, you know, we heard that Fred interview recently and he was talking about how, hey, we don't really know where we are as a team. Like, what is the direction of the team? That's leaked out a couple of times from the players. Like, what exactly is the purpose of the season? I think that's what that was. That was the boiling over of, you know, you might have a long career ahead of you, Scottie Barnes, but some of these other guys, they are sick of losing the season. They're not used to losing the season. And they're kind of tired of, what are we getting traded? Are we getting moved? Are we trying to win these games? Are we trying to tank these games? What exactly is the agenda here? The two streams thing is just, it's clearly over. They got to pick a direction.
Well, there was never really a plan going into this season, though, in terms of what they were trying to be. Like, I guess they had a decent year last year. They make the playoffs. They take, six games they lost to Philly? Could have been even, you know. Remember we watched that game the first half, it was so good. You're like, oh my God, this might go seven. And then the second half was one of the worst watching experiences of my life. The Raptors.
Well, and Embiid's game winner too.
Yes. And I don't necessarily know if there's been, you know, a solid plan on, they're kind of like half pregnant here. They're wanting to compete. They're wanting to develop. Like the last couple of years.
But that has worked for them.
Yeah, I guess it's worked, but I don't know. I just got spoiled with the championship and you wonder what the total overall plan is with this team.
Okay, so
like it seems to me that like they kind of bought themselves a lot of runway with that championship, and they're kind of which is true.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's come to an end. Like I feel
it's
everybody
coming to an end.
Well, people but I still feel like the front office is pretty, you know, well defended. Like they have a lot of people that defend them pretty hard.
Yeah, of course, as they should.
But
except for
it just feels like them getting that championship has given them an excuse to kind of turn this team into a science experiment. Like everybody's got to be 6'9" and can't shoot and all this. It's like, can we just have positions? Is that allowed? Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't necessarily love the direction of the team right now. Like I really wish that they had a good team surrounding Pascal Siakam, who was an all NBA guy.
All I was going to say is the thing with Barnes is the Raptors have had success developing younger players around winning teams, right? Siakam was developed around winning teams. They got Fred developed around winning teams. Like they had Powell develop around winning teams. There was second round pick. There were lots of good cases, lots of good instances of this. The thing is, though, is that Pascal Siakam's hitting his career strides as an NBA player, and his age
so
is
so good.
Yeah, but when he was 27 and 28 years old, we just said Scotty Barnes is younger than Jobo.
Just crazy.
Like, it's going to take a little while before Scotty Barnes is fully fleshed out Scotty Barnes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, is he the future of the Raptors? Has it been a disappointing season for him? Absolutely, it has been. But this whole idea of, like, merging the timelines in hindsight does look a little stupid, mm-hmm. given that, like, what is the history of the league with 21-year-old basketball players taking the reins of being just a co-pilot on winning teams? It's just, it's not really there.
I'm thrilled to be on the right side of history saying that I would have traded him for Kevin Durant in the offseason.
Yes.
Like, everyone's like, oh, you can't. It's like, oh, you mean the guy having MVP season?
That was so weird that he was somehow untouchable.
It's like, oh, it's like Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
But it was untouchable because you couldn't, if you could have just done the contract swap straight up, right? Barnes for Durant. Fine. But it was like, you had to give up. You had to figure out, okay, what else goes out?
But it's going
to
be OG. And,
sure, the principle of it was insane.
Yes.
And, but that was always brought up by here. Even, you know, we had Blake in here, and everyone said, yeah, of course you trade Scotty Barnes for him straight up.
Not everybody said that.
Yeah, well, not everybody, but that's because some people are,
unserious.
You know, they're just Raptors fans.
Yes.
And, yeah, people freaked out a little bit about, well, what if he doesn't want to be here, like Kawhi, like when you won the championship?
Oh,
<how'd that> yeah. like, anyways, Sammy's here, my co-host on Leafs Talk. Subscribe, review. Again, it always helps us when you hit that subscribe button, when you leave 5 stars, do all that stuff up after every Leaf game. You and Borny did it yesterday. Good mm-hmm. little stream.
Yeah.
I watched it.
God,
it's always weird.
He's so handsome.
Yeah, he is handsome. You guys are definitely the like the power rankings of the handsome stream. It sucks being number three. Sucks. We gotta bring in more co-hosts, more just dorks. Ugly dorks is the new prerogative of Leafs Talk. That's gotta be a thing. There's no more. The handsome guy quota is full.
Yes.
You know, guys who can grow beards, done. You know, actually that should be what we do. You and Borny gotta shave. You guys gotta shave.
So it looks like Leafs Talk with Marianne Alton, my mom.
Yeah, exactly.
When I shave because I look exactly like her. Anyways.
Anyway, I wanted to bring you in today to do Leafs. I don't know, Leafs awards, Leafs mid-season stories, go through some of the lists kind of retroactively. We hit game 41, and this isn't what we do on Leafs Talk, right? What we do is break down the exact game. Again, you and Bourne did a good job yesterday. I liked a lot of the points. I actually thought, this is a better show when I'm not on it.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, I was like, this is quality. Oh, dude, there's some guy right now just nodding in his car, right? Like,
he's right.
He's right. It's the only good take he's ever had. Anyway, so I sent you a list of topics, and then I actually have
right
a couple of just little side ones that are easy to answer.
Yeah.
So Leafs midseason awards, Leafs midseason checkpoint, whatever the hell. Let's start with this. Story of the season to you so far.
I think that you're just in the exact same scenario with a death march to the playoffs to play the same team you've played the last year. And
doom?
Doom.
The Toronto weather
it's
has
doom.
Gone to you.
No, it's doom.
Gloom. You're the gloomed out.
Listen, I want to be positive about the Leafs. They're playing
so well. But that's the future story.
No, it's...
That's the now story to you?
It is.
Okay.
I mean, like, what are the big games left? The games they play against Boston? The games they play against Carolina?
Could Boston just lose, like,
never.
One
they
game?
They win every...
do you know...
I love it. They're like, oh, they're going out to Carolina. Yeah. I mean, that means they're going out to California. They might have a tough time. 8-1 of the Docks.
Hey, you know, guess what I did yesterday? My favorite bet ever, which is good teams, in-game bet, covering 1.5 against crappy teams. Last night, I bought the Bruins at -135 to win by 1.5.
Wow. What was the score when you bought it?
It was 2-1.
Oh, wow. Nice bet.
Guess what I did? I put a lot of money on it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I was rich yesterday. Yeah, Coward Parlay hit. I hit that Bruins
thanks,
bet.
Buddy. Thanks for the money.
I'm flush today. I'm feeling good.
So, yeah, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but like I want to be excited because I do think they look better this year than they did last year defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can talk about Morgan Rielly a little bit later, but I do think that it is just the regular season. Everybody talking, oh, the regular season doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Like, that's the story to me. Like, it's true. It has come true. We all talked about that in the preseason, and that story has come true. They're not moving up. They're not moving down. They're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning in March and in April.
Yeah.
Like, that's the story to me. Like, it's like, it's preparing to play Tampa.
Yeah. I will say this. I do these shows with you now every day.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen you since you've come back from Mexico. Yeah. You came back to the weather. You've been a little doomy gloomy guy.
No, it's true. You've been a doomy gloomy guy.
Oh,
it's the story. Hey. Oh, Mitch Marner's been unbelievable. Yeah. Is that the story? The story is that they're playing the goddamn Tampa Bay Lightning again.
Hey,
it's true.
And this is doom talk by Mr. Doom and Gloom. No, hey, ultimately that to me is it's a big overarching story of the season. But to me, the story of the season so far has been the team defense. Mm. That's been why I feel a little differently about this team. And I know that that's kind of idiotic at times to go, like, there is nothing more embarrassing as a Leafs fan, a Leafs commentator, to go, the reason why I feel different this year, the second you say it, you feel like...
You're literally the guy that said, there's always next year.
You're the most embarrassing guy. You're the most embarrassing person when you step to the plate with that. I cannot imagine having to do this in a not safe space. Going down to, like, Boston, right? And if I had to be a guest on a Boston sports radio show...
I just declined that request.
No, but they go, so, how do you feel about the Leafs this year? And I was like, so the reason why
defense is elite.
Yeah. I just look at this group, and I think that it could be different is they just would be cackling. Hey, 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 hey. All those guys. Ugh. They'd be laughing. They would be laughing. But to me, the story of the season so far has been that the way that they play hockey is, to me, more conducive to winning. And they really seem to be a group that has bought into a lot of what Sheldon Keefe's messaging has been for the last couple of years. The attention to detail has gone up. Their main forwards have all bought in. I actually think probably, you know, we're going to do underrated stories of the season or whatever, but this isn't my answer, but I would put it in there, is that Matthews is so good defensively that he actually, if he just killed some penalties, he would 100% be in the Selke conversation.
He made a couple plays last night specifically where he's just... between the hash marks, below the goal line, in his own zone, constantly.
He's a beast. Yeah. He's an absolute beast. And all of his 5-on-5 numbers reflect that. Anyways, you've gotten William Nylander, who's now locked into this, Mitch Marner, who's been obviously brilliant at it all season long, and Austin Matthews, the three main focal points of the team, going, yep, we get it. We're going to play a 200-foot game. We're all going to buy into this. And there's been a few lapses. Yeah, it's an 82-game season, and Keefe keeps trying to... Every once in a while, he kind of pulls that little bit of a lever when they only after they've had like two or three games of it in a row where they haven't performed up to that defensive standard, he'll kind of mention it and go, we're getting a little loose with the puck. We're getting a little loose with the attention to detail. And then what do they do? Every single time, refocus it. Anyways, Leafs are top 5 in goals against, top 10 in expected goals against. They're top 5 in high danger goals against. Like, and those being positive stats, by the way.
Yeah.
And they've got 80 games missed to injury amongst their top 7D. Like, to me, you look at that, and by the way, that's including Muzzin.
Yeah.
Who's been gone basically the entire season, but I think that it's fair to include Muzzin.
Well, he was on the roster to start the year.
But, like, they've had all these interchangeable parts they've thrown in, doesn't matter. They've had all these kind of different looks among players, and guess what they've always had is a strong defensive group, a strong defensive showing. So, to me, like, that is the story of the season. That is why I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic, is just, like, they are a team that can win low-event games, and then they have these superstars at the very top that can finish with the best of them. And, yeah, I just think no matter what happens this year, even if it is another first round exit to Tampa, there is part of me that goes, this year was progress because of the way that these guys have matured. It's a lost season. There's no doubt, but I'm not going to spin that out and be like, I'm thrilled.
We'll talk about that.
No, I'll be as pissed off as anybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll talk about that the day after they lose to Tampa the first round.
I think that the lamest thing you can do when your team loses in the playoffs is be like, way to go, gang.
Handshake line is back.
Hey, way to go. I'm out there clapping. That's for your mom to do. You know, like, that's for your mom to be.
Yeah. You did great.
Yeah, like,
and Pete.
Yeah, and Pete. And loser Pete. Anyway, that's it for me.
Yeah. I'm sorry to be so negative, but I can't help but measure everything against that first round. And all that matters is the first round against Tampa.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, the story of the season overall is do they get out of the playoffs first round?
Yes.
You're right. I'm looking at it as what is at the midway mark, what has been the story season so far. Different ways. Okay. I'm going to save midseason MVP. I'm going to skip it for a second.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to shuffle it up. Yeah, I'm going to save it because...
Throw me a curveball here.
Well, I was
practicing on the subway, so now I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you're like looking in your phone. Yeah, do the beats. No, I'm just going to save it for after the break because my tease for midseason MVP is...
It's not Mitch Marner?
No, I did a lot of digging last night, and I just think, here's what I'll say. It wasn't as clear to me as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Biggest overachiever?
John Tavares.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Make the case.
I mean, everybody said he stunk and he sucked and he couldn't play anymore and he's too old and slow.
Makes 11
and,
sheets.
And he hurt. He had oblique injury and spring. Yeah. Or, sorry,
no,
this.
The oblique thing and then showing up and everyone being the heartbeat of the team for the first couple weeks.
Everyone was like, this guy is done. Yeah. You know, he can't earn this money. And he's like, oh, wait, he's still John Tavares. He's going to finish with 82 points in 82 games. Like, he's John Tavares. And everybody thought he wasn't. So for me, like, you can say, oh, it's Pontus Holmberg, or you can say, oh, it's David Kampf, or, you know, you can say one of these guys. But the guy that is outperforming his expectations the most going into the season is John Tavares.
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
Well, he's a point-of-game player. He has been his whole career. He's a point-of-game player.
But everybody said he stunk. Everyone wrote him
those
off.
Those guys are... The people who say he stunk are idiots.
Everyone.
No, you guys...
Every Leaf fan you talked to, man, was like, oh, I'm worried about... Like, don't give me a break. Yeah. Like, everybody was worried about him going into
this
year.
A lot of people have been worried about him. There's no doubt about it. And even if you... I know he scored a bunch of points. He's gotten his cookies over the last couple of games. Because guess what? Hey,
he's the number one... cookie-driven man.
Yeah.
When he gets an early goal, he's the fastest guy. He's a cookie monster.
Buddy, you think that a guy through his entire track record of playing hockey gets a ton of points
We talked about this on Thursday with Kiffer and Moore. We were joking. He was like, oh, he's falling below his...
No, he'd get there.
And then I was like, yeah, he'll get five the next three, and then he'll be back on his pace.
He's 100% going to get there. He's fine. Anyway, Tavares to me is just, has he overachieved to a certain degree? I would say yes. Mm-hmm. But I guess I contextualize this from the standpoint of, who did we not expect as much from, but also money? And if you're a point-of-game player, John Tavares, like, he looks exactly like John Tavares. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at him and gone, oh, my God. To be early part of the season.
Better than John Tavares.
Early on, he did. But lately, he has sort of cooled off.
Yeah.
And I know cooling off still means dominating, getting a ton of points the last couple of games. But either way, I would say that he's pretty much where I expected him to be right now. If you told me, hey, game 41, Tavares is going to have...
Point of game.
Hot stretches, point of game, cold stretches, play with Mitch Marner. It's going to work out. Yeah, great. I think he's right where I needed him to be. Mine is Giordano.
Okay.
He's second most on the team in 5-on-5 minutes.
For sure. And he's showing it recently.
Yeah, that's true.
He hasn't missed a game.
Hasn't missed a game. Making 800K. And if you just look at a bunch of... He's playing too much. Here's the thing.
He's playing way too much.
But... the role that he took, when we're talking about, hey, this team's focused defensively, so much of why they've been able to maintain their level on the blue line is because this guy will do it all for them. He'll kill penalties for them. He'll play heavy 5-on-5 minutes. He's been jumping around with different partners, and it's been super effective. I was looking at this, and this will be kind of coming up a little bit later too, but defensive pairings that the Leafs have had with over 100 minutes, their best one from an analytical standpoint has been Gio and Sandin.
How often have they played together?
Over 124 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
This season?
Yep, 5-on-5.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, man,
I watch every game, and they play that much together?
That's what I'm saying.
So his number one pairing has been Hall, though, right?
His number one pairing has been him and Hall.
Yeah.
But 5-on-5, actually, those two guys have only played together 5 more minutes.
What?
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing to me.
I was surprised by that, too.
That's really crazy.
Like, anyway, I just... He's been a stud for them.
Mm-hmm.
He's been an absolute constant for them. Sorry, I screwed that up, man. No, it's way wrong.
Okay.
I was looking at Brody Hall. No, they've played over double together. Yeah, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. I was like, what's happening here?
I was like, I am up
4:30. I know. That's me. I just had the cursor over the wrong thing. That makes way more sense.
Yes,
I was like, that's why I looked again. I was like, that can't be right.
We watch all these games,
dude,
man.
I was going to be like the Joe Rogan podcast, having to issue apologies on Twitter for misinformation like 10 minutes later.
I said Connor Timmins was left-handed on the Leafs.
It happens. Anyways, Giordano has given them, I think, a real personality on the blue line. I think that when we've talked about things like team toughness and team buy-in, he's absolutely been those things.
Mm-hmm.
He's looked way better than I ever expected him to be. And yes, does he look like a guy who's slowing down a little bit right now? 100%. But he also, this was a wild one to me too. In November, December, he played, he's just as an absolute machine. Guy just plays. He played 12 straight games with over 20 minutes.
Yeah. When they didn't have anybody on the decor.
Like,
he was their top pairing guy.
Yeah.
Him and Hall played the most minutes.
For a guy that's making, and I know he's circumstantially 800K. He could have made more. He wanted to be here, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, he's, for all the love Jason Spezza got here, and I think he deserves a lot. I still say build the Spezza statue, you know, put him on Legends Row, steal him from the Sens.
With the knee flying on Pionk's head.
Yes.
That's what the statue should be.
fighting in the playoffs, everything, giving you goals in the playoffs. You look at the secondary scoring for the Leafs Spezza. The last couple of years, it's just all Spezza.
Clappers.
Giordano's given them so much more than Spezza gave them any regular season. It's, yeah, not even comparable. So, yeah, he's my biggest overachiever. Biggest underachiever.
Morgan Rielly.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, you know, availability is a big part of, you know, being good. And he was hurt for a long period of time. I know that's not his fault, but he was hurt for a long period of time. Wasn't very good before that. It was a lot of conversations. He hasn't scored yet. He's come back. They haven't been very good defensively since he came back. You can also talk about the goalies having an 852 during that stretch. Like, I'm not going to put it all on Rielly, but to me, it's pretty clear that he's the biggest underachiever.
Jobo, what's the record with Rielly versus not?
So the Leafs without Rielly is 12-2-1.
Yeah.
And with Rielly, it's 13-7-6. Mm. So they're a 500 club with Morgan Rielly on the ice.
Yeah. So I think those numbers right there to me prove the point. Like, he's definitely been an underachieving player, especially when he's your top guy.
Your answer is right.
Who's yours?
Nick Robertson.
Oh, well.
Well, here's why. Let me make the case. So I was looking at this just, okay, because the big story lately has been Yarncroc. Hey, he's a guy who can play with good players. And yeah, Yarncroc's a professional NHLer, and he's been around the block, and Nick Robertson's a developing guy. So there's reasons not to compare the two. But yeah, Nick Robertson, in 15 games, had 5 points, and he only had one game with goals. And he played with those guys, like in a bunch of them. Yarncroc, since playing with those guys, has 5 goals and 15 points. And yeah, he's got 4 goals and 11 in his last 9 since he returned from the injury.
Like, he's been really good.
Yeah, he's been really good. But the point is that you get to play with those two guys. Life should be pretty simple. Life should be pretty easy. And what have people talked about with Yarncroc? Oh, he's got a really nice shot. Because you get to set up.
And he fights to the spots.
Dude, he does.
He's bigger. He's stronger. He's much more of a man. Like, there's
He is.
Yeah.
My point is, though, is that if you are just a guy who can shoot the puck, playing with those two guys and being able to kind of get around that area around the hash mark is kind of where would you rank that among the best jobs in hockey right
Very
now?
High.
Yeah, it's pretty good being the Yarncroc, right? Yeah. There's a reason why his stats got inverted. Robertson really never showed that, and why he's disappointing is because the preseason he dominated. Yeah. He was the Brandon Cozen, where people went, hey, it's the undersized guy who's lighting up the preseason. Hey, this guy's going to have an impact. I was pissed off that he started the year down and that they chose Malgin over him. I still actually think that that's an underrated story, is that they should have just cut bait with Malgin. They should have flipped him somewhere.
Malgin wouldn't have Dryden Hunt.
Maybe not. But to me, it was like killing the momentum for that kid might have hurt his season. I don't know.
You and I were on different planes with Robertson.
Yeah.
Like, you always had a lot more belief than I did. And it maybe helped that I didn't see any of the preseason because I was on my honeymoon. So maybe I didn't have that in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
But I just never really believed in Robertson.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just like, when the Leafs were playing well and being good and going into the playoffs, I never really expected Robertson to be involved, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
It must suck watching his brother score every night.
Yeah, the defenseman making $7.5 million, that's an offensive defenseman who was zero goals and who's given up more than he's getting it's clearly him. The thing is, I guess for me, you're right, this is an exercise in, I've never been as high on Rielly as some other people. So to me, this is actually a little bit of a feeling of, he's never been this before.
No.
But this is a little bit more of me going, huh, this is kind of what I've been saying to everybody, is it's not all, you know, peaches and cream with this guy. There's
some warts.
Yeah, there's some warts to this.
Yeah.
And with Robertson, I just thought that the Leafs needed a young guy to step into one of these roles. And it turned out to be Holmberg, who's actually giving them like significant minutes. But yeah, dude, I wanted him to be a guy. And like, now, what is he even as a trade piece now that he's hurt and he's coming off of his second year where
I don't think you trade him now.
No, you have to put him back on that awesome Marlies team that's just dominating every single night and hope that he can
Joe Wall, by the way.
Yeah, Joe Wall, the future.
He's hot.
Joe Wall, Steves. They got some fellas down on the Marlies right now that are.
I think Joe Wall is a 9-4-3 right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
He's got it. Or maybe in his, how many games has he played? Not many, right? He's like, I think he's 8-0.
He's definitely undefeated. And then there's that Noel Hoffenmeyer kid. He's 23. He's not
nice.
A child, but
nice Marlies talking.
Yeah.
As a quick aside, it's ridiculous how poorly supported they are. And I put myself in that category.
Yeah.
I watch highlights from their games. And there's like 12 people there. I'm like, this is one step below the NHL for cheap.
Haven't
in
you
your
gone
city.
With me before?
I've been like once, and it was like the semifinal game.
No,
seven.
You can sit right there.
I know it's sad that no one goes. Anyways,
my embarrassing one is that I went to all those Calder Cup playoff games. Yeah. I watched Garrett Sparks dominate.
Oh, you loved him.
Yeah, I did.
Oh yeah, great pads.
I watched Andreas Johnsson get sent back down to the Marlies and basically look like Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, he was so good.
He's Connor McDavid of the NHL.
Quad A
guy. Dude, he was incredible during that run. Yeah. The Marlies won. They were stacked. And I went, I'm going to dedicate myself to going to more of these games and committing.
How many Vincent?
I think I've been one Marlies game.
What year was that? 2017?
I know, yeah.
Like 10 years ago.
Do you remember the whole pandemic?
Everyone did the whole, we got a championship hockey team in the city and nobody cares. I went, all right, let's relax a little. Let's throw the rakes on.
They chanted Ben Smith, stay one more year for Ben Smith at the rally.
The most annoying part is that like
Todd Luschko stole him to Germany.
The three bloggers that cover the Marlies trying to take way more credit for, you know, that was always too much. Anyway, let's do one more and then let's take the break. Most underrated story?
I think Sheldon Keefe. Hmm. I think he, you know, you see every list come out for the Jack Adams and all this stuff, and he's never mentioned. Hmm. And, you know, you talk about all this buy-in, you talk about the team defense, you talk about the injuries, the man game loss, everything. Like, doesn't he have one of the best winning percentages in the history of the NHL with, like, 300 games coach? Like, he is really good coach. Every single place this guy's gone, they've won way more than they've lost. And I'm not talking about a little bit. I'm talking about a lot. Like, you can talk about the Marlies and them having a stacked team and them making the most money. But you go back to Junior. You go back to Pembroke. And, like, he wins no matter where he goes. And he's doing it again in the NHL. He's got a really great team this year that's humming. And I think, you know, he just doesn't get any buzz for being the coach of the year. To me, it's just like he's in the number one media market. Everybody's, I think, more critical of him than they are, I think, praise from a day-to-day basis. And to me, like, if they don't make it past the first round, you might get fired, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But he may be the Dwayne Casey, may win coach of the year and then get fired. Just to me, it's like, it's underrated how good the leaders are underneath him, and they had so many injuries in the back end. To me, it's Sheldon Keefe.
Well, here's the problem is they flashed that graphic, right, of all-time winning percentages by head coaches, and he's among the top five. Mm-hmm. He's like third or second.
Among active coaches, he's number one.
Yeah, among active.
6-8-1.
I'm saying all-time.
6-8-1.
He wins all the regular season games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess this is my sort of doom and gloom version of the where the playoffs matter is, he's below 500 in the playoffs. Yeah, he hasn't won a series, and it just...
And
frankly, he's been out-coached. And so, the team is awesome in the regular season under Sheldon Keefe. We have learned that
a regular season award.
That they have, and this is all I'm saying is I kind of understand why there has been a little bit of, hesitation to just throw flowers at this guy's feet. One, it's been done before. He's gotten a lot of flowers in this market post-Babcock. Lot of time where he got a lot of flowers. Two is, I think that this is true too, and I don't think a lot of media members would admit this. I don't know. I'm trying to think of if it's true for me, and I'll put my hand up if people think it is, but I don't actively think about it. So many people thought he was going to get fired that I think that there is a little bit of sheepishness of like, oh, okay, well, he's been great. But also, as much as they have turned it around and they're this awesome team right now, if you were a coach that was almost fired during the regular season, I think that should count for at least a little bit of our look back here as a percentage of the season. He did recover from it, though. Great. His team bought in.
First 10 games, we all thought he was
dead. Yeah, like, anyway, I think you're right, deserves a lot of credit. He's probably not getting enough, but I still think that the biggest underrated story is, well, it's two guys. It's Nylander and it's Brody, and I really couldn't decide.
Brody, no one talks about him, but he's so good.
Brody's suppression numbers are insane.
He's unbelievable.
But to me, the biggest thing is, again, I'm going to natural stat trick and
Flames fans? I'll never forget the show.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
The day after they signed Brody, me and Gunnar were doing the show in the morning. Yeah. On Saturday morning, I'll never forget. Or maybe it was Wonger. Jake Gardner. I was like, Jake Gardner?
This could not be further
I've
from that experience.
I've never seen anyone less like Jake Gardner play hockey ever. Like the opposite of Jake Gardner.
I remember that last night prepping this to the point where I thought, I should get a Calgary person on to tell Toronto what it was like. Because it doesn't make any sense. First of all, he only makes $5 million.
Which, they pay him more?
Yeah.
He should make more. Yeah, that's a weird contract he signed. Agent.
You know, here's what I think is great. If you're Connor Timmins' agent, you're going, thank you for this. Because this is the TJ Brody stat for how important he is to this team. Among all defensive pairings, that the Leafs have trotted out there. There's only been six of them that have played over 100 minutes of ice time together. Mm-hmm. They've got the highest expected goals for percentage. Their nerd numbers are dominant to the point where you go, should he play more? And it's like, no, it's just, this is the Yarncroc thing is, hey, if you actually put a better guy next to the awesome guy, you're going to be fine. Anyway, Brody is just the ultimate fixer. Again, you put him next to just about anybody and it works out. The only guy where the goals for percentage that he plays with is over 100 minutes that's below 50% is Morgan Rielly at 41. Tough, again, look for Mo, but everybody else... Justin Hall, right? He's had this season where everyone thought he was going to be the whipping boy. He was off the team, blah, 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 blah. Goal four percentage, Justin Hall, TJ Brody on the ice, 70%.
Yeah. TJ Brody is their best defenseman.
Yeah. Just, it's just, and no one really, he never comes up in conversations. He's never a guy that you talk about. You never see him in front of the media because he hates it.
Oh my God.
Him,
he's so bad.
Dude, him talking to the media is genuinely, it's how I feel when I have to go to the doctor. Same feeling. You're just like, no, there's got to be a way that we don't have to do this. I'll just die. I'd rather just die than do this. Anyway, Brody just deserves some kind of love. But then, no, to me, the underrated story is still Nylander because, man, he's, I've said this before, but he has looked as good as Matthews and Marner on a lot of nights. And those are two of the best. Yeah, those are two of the best 10, 12 players in the NHL.
That's, I agree with this take. I think there's a lot. Like you mentioned with Keefe, in terms of people that have killed him forever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when we were talking about firing Keefe earlier in the year and all that stuff, and that's why maybe people are a little hesitant to give him credit. It's the exact same thing with Willie, because they've had six straight seasons of calling this guy whatever, and, you know, he's the most polarizing guy. And I think there's a lot of people hesitant to give him credit because of how the bad things they've said about him. Yeah. And listen, like,
He could have 45 goals this year.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable, man. And like his skate, like
imagine a 45 goal scorer in Toronto's like Maple Leaf fan history. You know how many times you've seen a talent like Nylander and him being under those two guys. And you're right. I think that because they are the PP Whack boys, and we're a little afraid of Nylander having those. To me, there's almost this little bit of fear of he gets too much credit, and then all of a sudden he just goes.
Well,
into the tank.
That's the thing. Whenever Sheldon Keefe's asked about him, he never fully gives him credit. Like he always,
I like that.
Me too.
Trying to earn it.
He's always like, oh, you know, but we really feel like he can do this. We really feel like he can do that. And like, he's doing it. And, you know, we talked about this a couple of Leafs talks ago, but I've never been like a hater or a lover of Willie. I've kind of been down the middle with him pretty much his whole career.
Yep. Same.
He has gone to a level that I don't think I ever expected. Mm-hmm. Like I thought he was a great player. I thought he was making, you know, a reasonable contract, thought he was really overachieving that. But this year he is an $11 million player in the NHL. Like we're talking about his next contract extension.
Yeah.
You know what Pasternak's going to get? It's going to be around that. Like he really, really has gone to a level I never expected. So I think it is a little bit underrated, but people are very afraid. Everyone's afraid that it's going to go back to 2 weeks of not noticing him. I don't think it's going to happen, but like that's in there. So I think that's why people are hesitant.
Yeah, I couldn't be more impressed with the guy.
Agree.
And you're right. I've been pretty down the middle this year. He's been, among my favorite Leafs to watch, you know, he's been very high for me. Like we do Leafs talk every night and I usually have a lot of Nylander notes and they're almost always positive. And even now there's times where like you see him battling along the boards in ways that he never did before and you go, holy crap, this is insane for him.
And like Barney said it best, he could skate as fast as he want with a glass of water on his head.
Yeah, I do love that.
Tip over.
I do love that. The only thing I've never been down the middle on with Nylander is people who call him Bill. I think that's embarrassing.
I hate Bill.
Yeah. Anybody who calls him Bill Nylander is just, you got to go. Moon jail immediately.
I prefer William to Bill.
Yeah. No. Yeah, people go, Bill.
Bill Nye, the scoring guy.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. Oh, yeah. That's see, that's.
Sorry.
We got to take a break.
Okay.
Take a break. Yeah. We'll come back. I'm just going to, midseason MVP, I thought was, I tried to be cute, and then it turned out to be.
You were trying to zig and zagging?
I was trying to zig and zag, and then.
I love a good Zag.
Yeah. And then I'll also meet a couple of my dumb speed. Anyways, you want to weigh in on any of this stuff, shoot a line at Sam A. McKee, at JD Bunkus. Both Twitter and Instagram. Or again, you just do a nice thing. You could leave a review, 5 stars. If you disagree with anything, hit us up. Quick break. We'll come back with MVP and our dumbest takes.
Sportsnet 590.
All right. So we're doing Leafs Midseason Awards. JD Bunkus, Sam McKee. The hosts of Leafs Talk and Bourne, but he's not here today. We never try to make Bourne do more work, all right? He's a busy guy. All right, midseason MVP. Did you have any, let me just ask you this. Did you have any semi, did it take you more than a second? Did you do a deep dive? Did you just go with your gut? How'd you do it?
I just got.
I deep dove it.
I thought about getting cute and saying Willie.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I just said Martyr.
Yeah.
Because it's
I
Martyr.
Thought, I tried, okay, can I tell you? I did the same thing where I went and tried to get cute. And I will say this. I think that Matthews' year is very, like, he's not scoring goals, but he is a goal scorer. So I'm sorry, he has to be penalized for that. Selke stuff aside, he hasn't been the Matthews we saw last year. So when I was looking through all this stuff, his 5-on-5 numbers really pop. Like, there's actually an analytical case that Matthews is the best guy. And there's even a case for him being the MVP because he's so good, he allows Marner to go down, whatever, blah, 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 blah. It's Marner.
Mm-hmm.
And here were the main reasons for me. One is he's leading the team now in points, which should matter. But why are his even strength numbers not as good as Matthews, or why doesn't he have as many counting stats? Well, it's because he plays 2.5 minutes of shorthanded time every single game. Like, that's his average. If you look at that, you got to go to the 26th player in scoring at Mika Zibanejad to find the next person in the NHL that plays over 2 minutes of shorthanded time a game. Like, it's just not a thing that really happens. It's him. And then Konechny is 31st, again, 2:10, not as many as Marner. Adam Fox, a defenseman, 2:18, not as many as Marner. Heischer, 45 in scoring, 2:26. Not as, like, the top 50 players in the NHL in scoring, Marner is the number one guy in average minutes per game in penalty killing. And that's the thing to me, is he has clearly been the engine for this team for so long. He does it all for this team, defensive, offensive, whatever. He's scoring more. His shooting percentage is actually way up this year, which some people could equate to, like, he's never going to have he's never going to have the Matthew shot. But I do think his shot has improved. And I think that some of the shooting numbers are probably, like, would regress. But I also think that some of it is, like, he made a real focus to try to ensure that he was going to be more of a goal scorer this year. And, like, ultimately, he was really criticized as well at the beginning of the season. I think he took a lot of the ownership on his shoulders. He's matured a little bit in the media. He's done a better job, I think, of compartmentalizing. Yes, will he be judged in the playoffs? Absolutely. But midseason-wise, he's the guy who's done the most. He's the guy who's played up to standard the entire time. And I would say, too, like, as much as we do love the Nylander stats, like, Nylander, Bunting, and Matthews is obviously a better line than Tavares and Yarncroc slash, like, fill in the blanks who they've had there throughout the rest of the cycling through the regular season. He's done more with less in more situations. So, yeah, it's Mitch Marner. And I tried to get cute, and I tried to find some fancy stats, and I was going to make this whole case for why Matthews wasn't that. And then I just went, no, you know what? It's pretty plain and clear. Just, like, don't get cute. It's Mitch Marner.
Agree.
Yeah.
Everything said agree.
Cool.
Plays every situation.
Yeah.
Dominates every aspect of the game. He's their best guy.
Yeah.
Claire, he's the MVP.
Yeah, he is. He's been their MVP.
Yeah. Nothing else to add.
What's the most confusing piece of the season so far for you?
Why Matthews doesn't score.
Yeah. He's still on pace for 40 goals. Yeah.
But, I mean, he's a 60-goal pace guy every year.
I know. The standard's higher for the best.
And everyone's like, we're talking about how elite he is defensively and all that, which is true, but he's been that for most of his career. Like, it's not like it's the defensive side of the puck is new.
Yeah, we've been doing this for 2 seasons now.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's like, why isn't he filling the net? Why doesn't he have the games where he dominates offensively like he did in other years?
So I have my partial theory to this is, do you remember last year when people were like, why doesn't Matthews draw more penalties?
Mm-hmm.
And my answer was, because they give them all to Bunting. Mm-hmm. Like, Bunting is soaking up all of the penalties. Part of having Nylander on your line for more time, and this is just a theory, is that he's going to soak up more of the goal scoring than a guy like Mitch Marner did. There's going to be more spread the wealth, and especially since, like, Bunting has been scoring more. Like,
less defined scoring rules. Like, on the line that he played with Marner,
it was just
he's the shooter.
Yeah, it's just, hey, everything is for Matthews. Plus, he was tracing 60. Yeah, he's always just been sort of chasing those numbers. Mm-hmm. And, like, to me, it's kind of understandable why the goal scoring numbers have dropped off between some of the shooting percentages and, who he's had to play with. Nylander becoming more of a focal point where it's like a two-man. Well, all three guys shoot it on that line. But to me, the more confusing thing with Matthews is just like, why? What is up with the eye test part of this? Because I look at the numbers, and again, across the board, 5-on-5, it's pretty
probably
clear
dominant.
He's their best guy.
Yeah,
he's their best guy. The numbers, the nerd numbers to me, anyway, my dumb brain, the way that I'm able to interpret these things, across the board, he seems to be the Leafs' best player. and you kind of look at it and go, boy, I feel sort of like a bozo not giving him enough credit. Yeah. But no, they're just, the eye test thing is there have been way too many nights where you go, where is he? What's he up to?
What's he doing back there?
Yeah. What's going on? What's happening? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's focused more defensively. Like, yeah, it's usually the number one excuse you give for guys who aren't producing. Like we're kind of, everyone jumped all over JT Miller when he said, I'm not cheating the game. I'm playing defensively. That's why my stats are down. And everyone went, this guy, what a jerk. No, but I'm saying, and then Leaf fans in the same breath go, Matthews is actually not cheating the game. It's just funny that they bent that one. Anyway, my most confusing piece of the season so far is I still don't know what the hell this team should add. Every night, I feel different about it. I'm like, they should add a third line center. Then I'm like, they should add a second line winger. Then I go, they need to add some toughness and some minutes on the blue line.
Why not?
Maybe a goaltender.
All three.
Yeah, that would be great. That, you know, my perfect deadline is trade Engvall, bring in Taves, find a way to get Timo Meier and Erik Karlsson. So, yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. That seems fine.
With our, you know, with you have the luxury tax, it's perfect. No problem. Done deal.
Yeah. I keep getting hammered by these weirdos that keep getting mad at me about how I call some of the hockey markets irrelevant. When
people don't like that.
Yeah, I don't know why. I want to know who these people are that are so staunch.
The Ducks stands?
Yeah, that are from here and that are like, you should respect the Ducks more. They showed up to
the worst team in the league.
They refuse to win in regulation. They just like physically cannot do it. There's never, this season has been strange. I can't remember a year, and maybe this is just recency bias and I'm focused on it more and the Leafs are good, where there have just been so many teams that come in and you watch them and you go, this group sucks.
Yeah.
This is a horrible watch. They're not even like remotely competitive. This is a terrible team. Mm-hmm. And the Ducks to stand out amongst that crowd.
By far the worst I've seen.
Yes. And that's why I keep thinking it's so funny when everyone goes, it'd be so great if Bedard could go join Zegras and the young crew down there. I'm like, the young crew that sucks and has no heart? No, thank you. Yeah. In the irrelevant flip-flop market?
Yeah.
I won't apologize.
See Bedard last night, by the way?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
You know what I've been saying?
Two shorties, 13 shots on goal.
Yeah, two shorthanded goals, yeah. You know what I've been saying about Bedard? You're really good.
Yeah. This thing I heard about
him. You should tank for him.
Yeah.
If you're a Flyers fan or a Canucks fan, the generational talent that's from, you know, your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. as you guys keep finding ways to scrap and claw.
Stop doing that.
Oh, my God.
Stop winning.
Oh, my God.
Right now.
Could you imagine if this is what the Leafs are doing, what the Canucks and Flyers are doing during the McDavid and Matthews seasons?
No, thank you.
They just decided, you know what? It's about getting a couple of extra wins around. Wait till, by the way, Raptors fans, let that be a lesson to you. Wait till you guys see Scoot and wait till you see Wembanyama next year in the NBA. And you're like, we beat the Trailblazers on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah, we did it. This is what the team is supposed to look like, baby. Yeah, okay. All right. Just like I said, wait till you see that 7'3" freakish Frenchman dropping threes immediately in his career and go, huh? Or Scoot, who's like all muscle. It's like Derrick Rose. Hey, what would Derrick Rose be if he was even more jacked and faster? And you're like, oh, and passed. Like that would, you get to find out next year on a different team because the Raptors are like, yeah, let's beat the Hornets. Let's beat the Hornets. Let's be the sixth worst team. Dumbest take that you had all year.
Ugh, so many.
I know. But this is the humility part.
I'm trying to think. I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
Just I don't know. Like, I had so many stupid ones. Okay. Maybe last night, say, Connor Timmins shoots
well. Why are you so hard on yourself about that?
What about saying that?
Mine's Malgin.
Yeah, I guess.
I really got horned up for Malgin. And I went like, oh, this guy, maybe he's a thing. And then, yeah. Then he got no points. And
maybe a collective Kipper and Bora take, so we should move Tavares to the wing for Pontus Holmberg. All of us agreeing.
And then you guys didn't just make that take, but you decided, let's put the video out on social media so it's here forever.
And offer sheet. A lot of Holmberg ones.
Yeah, you guys, dude, you guys, and now you're doing push for Pontus.
I'm
genuinely, like, I'm getting suspicious of you guys with this. I'm starting to think Kipper, like, his agent called him and said, we'll give you 3% of his next deal, or I'll give you 1% of my cut. Yeah. If you just keep every day on one of the biggest hockey podcasts on the planet.
Yeah, maybe.
Keep saying he's
really good.
He's unbelievable.
He is kind of unbelievable.
Offer sheet, move Tavares to the wing.
Maybe me saying I like Zach Aston-Reese early in the year. Maybe that's one of my bad takes.
Zach Aston-Reese thing is fine.
What would a parlay last night? Did you see this on Leafs Talk? A parlay of Nick Delorier, Timothy Liljegren, Zach Aston-Reese, and Connor Timmins all scoring a goal in the same game.
Liljegren's shorthanded.
Shorty, he did it.
Dude, did you see that one guy had projected the Dolphins jet score 6-9? And lost it on that last stupid safety play.
Had a lot of buddies who lost +3.5 Jets on
luckily Coward's Parlay knew better to tease that up. But the 6-9, to predict the correct score.
That hurts.
Do you have it, Joe?
Really bad. What was this?
I'm going to pull it up right now.
Yeah, because I was going to say, it was like a... I think it was like a $100 bet.
It was $7 was the wager.
Okay, yeah.
For $2,387, and he lost it on the safety.
Sickening.
Yeah.
Sickening.
$34,000 were the odds.
That man didn't sleep.
No, he never will.
No.
He only lost $7.
That's such a Vic Palladian bet. $7 on a correct score. That's our boy Vic. Just like, that is his bets to a T. And then he'll text me and be like, bro, can you believe that I lost this 34-1 bet? And I'm like, yeah, Vicky, I can believe it.
And he only bet field goals. That was the entire thing.
It's amazing. It's a great bet. Anyways, that was great. Oh, yeah, quick rapid fire. Greats. Keith, Dubas, you already said Keith is your underrated story, so I'm guessing you're giving him an A?
Yeah.
Dubas?
I'd say B plus.
Yeah.
Yonkrock, sneaky good value now.
Well, 4 years of Yonkrock.
Yeah, but I mean, they're getting good value from all these guys. Yeah,
grabbing Timmins for nothing. Yeah. This is the thing, though.
Geo for nothing. You grab thing for nothing.
Depth players and you put them around a good team. Yeah. Things are going to work out. Yeah, I think that Dubas right now gets B plus for me. Like, the deadline's going to be big for him. Yeah.
Huge for that.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. Let's talk to Greg Jennings about what happened this weekend. Thanks, Sammy.
How about my Lions? Oh,
thank you, Lions. I got to tell you, so yesterday I'm in nightmare land. The Seahawks, I'll admit it, that rough in the passer that Jalen Ramsey got was pretty sus. He's standing on the side. Yeah, he lowers the shoulder a little bit in Geno. And then DK comes over and puts the finger in his face mask, which I love. I love that move, especially from DK because he's such a beast. He's so big. It's like, what are you going to do? And I love it. But Seattle kicks that field goal. They miss it. And I went into full, hey, Seahawks, just make the playoffs mode. Once they won last week to the Jets, there was no other choice. I'll admit it. I was rooting for them to lose to the Jets and just go, hey, draft pick. The season's kind of stuck. They need more help on offense and defense than people realize. Whatever. I was in full win mode. They clank it, and I'm like, of course this is what's going to happen. They find a way, they win in overtime. It's great. And then I'm just sitting there kind of sour going, man, if you're Lions, if you're one of those players and you're in that locker room and you're watching that, right, them clank it. Mm-hmm. The celebration in there must have been insane. And then for you to lose it, you know when you think you get hope, right? It's the Shawshank thing. Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope will drive a man insane. I thought all those Lions players were going to be broken. Yep. Spirit in tatters.
Yep.
And instead they come out and they play with guts. They play with heart. They do the right thing. They don't just tank. They don't say, hey, we want the draft pick. They come out there and they play Detroit Lions football. And they beat the Packers. They chase Aaron Rodgers likely out of town. Mm-hmm. That whole era feels done.
Yep.
Nothing sweeter than seeing the Packers lose, by the way. Seahawks get in, Packers lose. What a sweet combination. Anyway, Seahawks are in, and now they're in the perfect spot where it's like, I have nothing to lose. They beat that Niners team. It's the most embarrassing thing in 49ers history.
Yeah.
Because the Seahawks 100%. Think and they should win. I don't want to hear about Brock Purdy. They're amazing. They should win. They should dominate Seattle. Yeah. And if Seattle loses, it's like, whatever. That's what we were supposed to be. We were projected to be the third worst team of the season this year. Anyway, Greg Jennings, former Pro Bowl receiver, Super Bowl champion. He joins me now. What's up, man? How about those Lions?
Oh, what's happening? They roared last night, that's for sure.
You've never seen a Lions team. Like, every Lions team you played, not even a fraction of the heart of that team.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, man. The Lions this year, they won over a lot of fans. I think, again, we spoke about it earlier. Mm-hmm. The hard knocks kind of played a role into it. But Dan Campbell and just his transparency and just his ability to just galvanize guys and bring them together, man, that it was impressive to see them go out there and play the way they did and put up that type of performance.
Yeah, and I'll admit it as a Seahawks fan, just like Dolphins fans should admit, we shouldn't be in there. It should be for the most compelling playoffs. The Steelers should be in, and the Lions should be in. And yeah, like that's the case. I admit it. All right, Dolphins fans, your loser team that sucks and everyone is the most unwatchable product in the NFL right now. Seattle's kind of there with you. So I'm owning the brother in arms. But what do you take into that? Like them showing up, them winning that game, them beating Green Bay. Can you have momentum from a season to the next? Like, what does this actually mean for the Lions?
It means a lot because I was talking to someone about this last week. I'm from Michigan, you know this, and yep. I grew up a Lions fan. And so going into that game, you know, there's a feeling if you're a Lions fan of, okay, same old Lions are going to do something to blow it. And you saw opportunities in that game where it was like, okay, that's the one. That did it. But they never quit. There was always a resolve. There was always a get back up and start fighting again. And I felt like if they would have, it didn't matter what they did as far as how well they performed yesterday. Had they lost, it would have still been, well, the Lions find a way to lose. Same old Lions. But they come out and they win, and it's like this team is truly different. This team is turning the corner, and I believe they've turned the corner. They no longer are the bottom feeders in the NFC North or in the NFC for that matter.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to believe in them next year. I think that them hitting on Aiden Hutchinson, being a guy who actually wants to be there, someone who, is from Michigan and is as good as he is and as unique as he is just massive for them. I hope that Jamal Williams can roll into next year and still be a meaningful part of this team, because running backs fall off so quickly that, it's a little scary because he's such an identity player for them. The big question for me is, what do you do about Jared Goff? Because the team was really good at the end, but they've got some high draft picks. It's a good quarterback draft. What do you do at the quarterback position if you're the Detroit Lions?
So this one is tough. One is tough because if I'm the Detroit Lions, you don't think that Jared Goff is your long-term answer, but he definitely has been an answer. He's given you some stability at the quarterback position. He's played well enough to where you have to make a real tough decision. With the caliber quarterbacks that are in this draft, that you will have available when you're picking, I do not envy those in that draft room that has to make that decision. But if I'm in there, I go with the draft pick. I go get me a quarterback. He doesn't even have to start this year. I go get a guy, and I allow Jared Goff to continue to play and be a tutor. I think he would understand that situation. But I don't know if you can just let Jared Goff go.
No. This is the thing, man, is there are times where he looks awesome. And if we're talking about like rolling momentum from one season into the next, if you're a Lions player, I would imagine you don't want them to draft a quarterback. You especially don't want to use a high draft pick on a quarterback, right? You're thinking, hey, we're kind of close. Maybe we just draft another defensive back. Maybe we draft another linebacker. Maybe we go and, you know, get some luxury positions. But yeah, they have the number six, I think. No, maybe that's not that high. Whatever the Rams pick is. And then they have their own that's going to be at 18. They've got they've got a lot of good picks. And you just look at them and say, man, if you're a Lions fan, you're thinking about the long term, don't screw up and don't be one of those teams that overreacts and keeps the quarterback. But if you are trying to encapsulate this thing into 1 year, it does feel like, the better move would be to spam talent all the way around your roster that already feels good and try to invest in Jared Goff. It's a tricky one. Like it's honestly the obvious question of the offseason for them. Is Aaron Rodgers done in Green Bay? Is that the last time we saw him?
This is another one. I mean, we're going to find out really, really soon. I would err on the side of saying no. There's a strong possibility that we don't see Aaron Rodgers in the Green Bay Packer uniform any longer. The decision not to go with Jordan Love kind of can be read a couple ways early in the season, where it's like, okay, we didn't even display who he is, what he is for us, or what he could be for someone else. We know what Aaron Rodgers is. and we know what he's not any longer. And so I think you can move off of that if somebody is in willing to entertain a trade and take on that number. That's their issue. That's why I don't know if they'll be able to move off of Aaron Rodgers.
I keep thinking, I kind of feel like Tom Brady is going to go to the Raiders. But yeah, Rodgers going to either the Niners potentially if the Derek Purdy thing falls off in the playoffs, or I keep thinking the Jets would be an awesome landing spot for him. Like, there's just a couple of places where I think, I could see Rodgers. I could see a team trading for them that wants to take that step. He just does the Favre thing. But yeah, so you didn't read too much into the whole, I'm going to keep this one, the jersey thing. Didn't want to give it to Jameson Williams.
I didn't. I feel like with the response that Jameson Williams had, he was expecting to get it, and Aaron Rodgers obviously clearly was expecting to win the game.
Yeah.
And that he was going to have another game played as a Packer for sure. Mm-hmm. And so it would have been no deal. Oh, yep, I can give you this jersey, no problem. With that not being the case, it's like you lose. It was no Tom Brady ending on this one where he signs the interception football after losing. Like, I'm getting colored onto this one.
Well, yeah, his season. Okay, this is, I'm not there, you tell me. But, hey, there was two things. One is that Aaron Rodgers is obviously, like, hardcore competitive guy who's near the end of his career. He's had a tough season. A Lions player walking up to him right after he's been eliminated from the playoffs. And, like, this is no shade to Jameson Williams, but yeah, you're Jameson Williams who played like four NFL games. You're asking for Aaron Rodgers' jersey at the end of the year. I kind of felt like, yeah, if that's somebody else, maybe, like, if that's his former teammate, right? If that's Jamal Williams, maybe he says yes. Like, what is the code there with who you kind of have to be on the roster to ask for Aaron Rodgers' jersey?
Yeah.
It seemed like a stretch.
It's an unspoken code, right?
Yeah.
Like, Jameson Williams, obviously first-round draft pick, hadn't played all year, but a couple games. And had he been available all year, and he's been having a stellar year as a rookie, I believe there would have been he would have entertained that.
Yeah.
But without that, you got to come up to Aaron with another teammate, meaning you got to take Jamal with you and say, let me get that jersey. Use Jamal, just like Fred Warner was used in that moment of the interception.
Yeah.
Like with Greenlaw, with Brady.
Yeah. I thought that was the little bit of lost piece of that no one really wanted to discuss. But I'm like, hey, no offense to Jameson Williams, but Aaron Rodgers probably looking at him going, sorry, I don't know who you are. Like, why would I give you, who are you? I haven't seen you on film. We didn't play against you last time. And now you're coming up to me at the end of the game asking for a jersey. I just felt like it was a bit of a overstep by Jameson Williams. That's all. It was just from my standpoint. I was like, yeah, of course he's not going to give it to you. What are you talking about? Anyway, let's keep it moving. Let's keep it rolling. The Bills, the two returns by Hines, they were just, incredibly special. They were just, I think emotional moments for a lot of people. Everyone was kind of rooting on the Bills. But outside of the special win, do you feel like the Bills are the dominant team that we remember? Like, are you as confident as them heading into the playoffs as I know you and I once were at different points of the season?
Yeah, so I'm not. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest. I'm not as confident in them as I was early in the season. The Bengals have kind of won over my confidence as a team that I feel like they're the team to beat.
Agreed.
But when I look at the Bills and this what they were able to put on display yesterday, a couple things that come to mind for me. Sean McDermott is dealing with a roster of guys that he doesn't know how they're going to respond after what they experienced on last Monday. So I got to get my guys back out there and just see what I got. See what I got going into the postseason. See where they are mentally, where they are physically. And for them to respond that way, and yes, kickoff return right out the gate, blow if there was a roof on the stadium off, they blew that off. And then for them to continue to fight back, punch back, because the Patriots played a really good game. Mac Jones played a really good game, and they came back with some counters. And so to see your team battle after dealing with all of that emotion of what transpired with DeMar Hamlin and what is still going on with DeMar Hamlin. Like, to see that, I can't put a whole lot into that game other than the fact that this team showed so much resolve to find a way to dig deep and win. With all that aside, though, they look different than what we saw with a healthy Von Miller with them in the first half of the season, where it was like they got the ball and it's going into the end zone, period. There's nothing you could do about it. They don't look like that team any longer.
Mm-hmm. To me, it just feels like they're going to win one way, and that's a shootout. And that's why the neutral site thing kind of works for them, because, yeah, weirdly, all I could think of with that game is, hey, those special teams TDs were incredible. They were special moments. New England, I believe, was 29th in the NFL in DVOA on special teams this year, which is weird because you think Bill Belichick, he's obsessed with special teams, that would be a concrete unit for them, but they were not. They were one of the worst special teams units in the NFL this season. And I just like the Bills, they get that fumble, right? I think it was Singletary that fumbles the ball, and I go, these guys are just not really built to win that cold weather, low scoring. You need to be able to pick up the third down with a run play. You know, just they're not that tough up front. Josh Allen is all of their toughness on offense, and it just still feels like so much on his shoulders that, I don't know. I still have my reservations about it. I don't know if there's like multiple ways they're going to win. And I hope I eat crow, because I am going to be rooting for the Bills come playoff time. But yeah, they just, the defense, the run game, there's just, you know, how Diggs hasn't looked as dominant the second half of the season. There's enough things there where, yeah, I do put them a tier below where I see the Chiefs right now, and certainly where I see the Bengals.
Well, I will say this. The reason why I feel like it happens for guys like Diggs and not looking as dominant, like there's a dramatic drop off when it comes to typically performance when you have great weather and then it turns completely cold. Like it's just different. It's just different. I remember guys telling me that all the time. I would get off to a hot start and first half of the season, and towards the latter end of the season, it's like numbers didn't look like they were in the first. Well, duh, it was 75 and hot, warmer out here versus now it's barely touching zero. Like, it's different. It's just a completely different game that you're playing. It's to your advantage, but also to your disadvantage. And I believe for them, the best thing, the best possible scenario for them could have been neutral site. That just makes sense.
Yeah.
Or have Kansas City or home field, where Kansas City has to come to them, or the Bengals have to come to them.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be all right for them playing in Indy, if that is the place. I think that is still the place. Plus, they get the Dolphins. Like, that's a nice little ease back in game, especially given what we've seen from Miami these last few weeks. I think they're unwatchable. I think they screwed fans over. I don't even think it's worth talking about the Dolphins, because there's really nothing much to say about them. Like, they're dreadful. But I think the
number one question there is, what do you do if Tua gets cleared?
You got to play him.
But
if he wants to play and he gets cleared, you got to play him. That's just me. I don't know. Like, if he's cleared, I'm not his personal doctor.
I'm on the opposite end of that. You can't play him. You can't play him.
You just can't, because if he gets another concussion, the look?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't play him.
I get
it. Not this year.
Listen, I'm not against it. Like, I'm not like, hey, you got to tough it out and play Tua. I just, again, if he ends up getting cleared by a doctor, and that, like, I just don't know what the rule is there. I don't know what else you're supposed to say. If you're him, he wants to play, you're trying to win a playoff game, he's cleared by a medical staff. Like, if he's already shut down, then shut him down the last time. You know what I mean? Take the decision completely out of his hands. I guess where I would land with this is, I don't like where they're at with it, period. You know, they should have just shut him down. They should have taken the decision out of his hands and said, hey, this is over. We're not playing you again this year. And now that it's in limbo and the teammates have to wonder, just, boy, if, Skylar Thompson, I keep forgetting, whatever. Guess what? That's the game of the week where, if you're not a Bills fan, and I would say even if you're a Dolphins fan, you can basically just not watch. You can do whatever. That's Aaron's time. That's take a break. It's a lot of football these weekends. Just, you know, go take a walk, do whatever. There's absolutely no reason to watch that game. But they do kind of, they keep out a sort of growing, compelling Steelers team. And Steelers fans feel kind of like torn about this, where, like, I've heard some fans say, hey, we're just mediocre, and there's this acceptance of mediocrity that's been going on with this organization lately of just get over 500. But what do you think about Pickett and Pickens and the future of the Steelers?
I'm excited to see what the future looks like with those two guys growing together, learning together, gaining experience together. I like Pickett. I like Pickett from jump. I think, again, as a rookie, when you get thrown in, you're gonna have some highs, you're gonna have some lows, and the lows are gonna look really bad at times. But you have to keep your eye on the prize and understand that this is a journey. You got to walk it all the way out. And I think because of the success we've seen with some of the guys like Justin Herbert and even Joe Burrow, so soon the expectation is like, oh, you got to get it right now because those guys are doing it right now. And that's just generally not how it works. But, you know, that's what we want in today's world and society. Like, I want it now. Mm-hmm. Can you provide it? If you can't, I'm moving on.
Yeah. I wanted them to start him at the beginning of the season because he was playing the best in training camp. And if people recall, the offensive line was really bad and people were worried about it. And I think that's fair, right? Everyone always points to the David Carr situation, like different quarterbacks who've gotten hurt, Andrew Luck. But yeah, you do mention Joe Burrow, and he got thrown behind a horrific offensive line and he turns out to be fine. And my theory has always been, if you're going to break from quarterback pressure early on in your career, then you were probably going to break at some point anyway. You know, like you weren't going to be the guy. And so I think that they at least have somebody who shows something. And yeah, Pickens just looks like a freak. And it's crazy because he only had like 3 catches in that game. I think he finished with 3 catches, but every one of them was massive. And I go, yeah, this feels like the real deal. And yeah, Deontay Johnson, if you could just catch some footballs every once in a while, like one contested ball, one. Yeah, one consistent ball. Yeah, one time where it's not just in the breadbasket and you're sitting down into it. That would be good for the Steelers' future. Okay, does it matter to you that the Jags had to be bailed out by Josh Dobbs on that Josh Allen fumble and that Trevor Lawrence was pretty bad in such a big game?
It doesn't. It doesn't. That's the biggest game that he has played in his career. And so you expected to have, we all hoped like, oh, Trevor Lawrence is going to be big, but you clearly saw that he was a little shaken.
He was
a little shook in that game. Some of the throws, how off target he was at times, but you build off that now. And so any way you can possibly get in, he just got experience, free exposure to as what a playoff atmosphere is going to be like, because that was a playoff atmosphere. Now you go in against a Chargers team who you don't know what you're going to get with the Chargers. Let's just,
from a roster standpoint, no, because all their guys got hurt, they played in a meaningless game. So good job by Brandon Staley on that one.
Exactly. Like, what are you doing?
Did you hear what he said?
I did not.
He said, he was like, we only have so many players to play. We have to play some guys. And I'm like, the Giants, like all the other teams didn't play their starters that were locked in. You were locked into a 5 seed. Like, why'd you play Herbert? Mike Williams is one of my favorite receivers when he's healthy, right? But he's never healthy. Like, his catch radius is insane. He makes the hardest catches in the NFL consistently, in my opinion. Like, he's the guy where, you know, you need one jump ball for your life in the NFL, healthy player. It's the guy. But he's always hurt. And they put him in that game, and he gets hurt. And Bosa, another guy where people go, hey, he's really good when he's healthy. He's an injury-prone guy. They play him, and he's always start. Like, I genuinely think if they lose this game next week, they have to fire Brandon Staley because of this. Like, they have to do it.
Yeah, I didn't understand the logic of playing their guys. The moment I saw Mike Williams get hurt, you got to be kidding me. Like, why, you know the history and but on the flip side, the importance of what he provides when he's on the field for you and your quarterback, you can't take that chance. And Bosa, like, as a defensive guy, you're just coming back. You just wait the week.
Yeah. I can't believe that they did it. And it's weird because I know the Chargers have their way of doing things, and that was kind of working for them for a little while where it wasn't working, and Keenan Allen had the tweet. You and I talked about it, and there seemed like real dysfunction in the organization over like their situational football and the analytics stuff. And then it started working and Herbert looked like Herbert and everyone went, hey, we were too harsh to Staley. Then he does this. And I'm like, boy, oh boy, oh boy. Like, this was not it. And now my feeling is that they threw off their momentum of the season with this stuff. And it's a very strange game. Like, it's a total coin toss game between them and the Jags. But if they lose, and I'm a Chargers fan and Sean Payton sitting out there, I sure would be thinking about it. Like, I sure would be hoping that would happen. And then this is a take I actually want to give you. So the Titans are they suck. They're done. They don't have anything. And our, you know, one of our producers is a huge Titans fan. JD. And he's crushed. He thinks that Dobbs was still holding on to the football. I'm like, you're out of your mind. You know, he can't watch a game with any rational eye. But if I was the Titans, I would actually, like, open it up to league and go, hey, what would you give us for Vrabel? Because they're not going to get good soon. So, like, should they shop Vrabel? Like, where do you put him amongst the game's best coaches?
Well, he's been able to do a lot with minimal. Like, I mean, let's be honest. Like, the Titans haven't had a tremendous amount of talent defensively. We know what they're going to be. Offensively, it's like, okay, Derrick Henry or not, Derrick Henry or bust.
Yeah, and guess what? Like, Derrick Henry's kind of done.
Yeah, like, you can't continue to rely on Derrick Henry to just average 300-plus carries a season. So I'm not shopping Vrabel. Mm. Like, you, it's hard enough to find quarterbacks, let alone coaches. Like, I can't shop Vrabel.
Yeah, you're probably right. He's such a culture setter. It feels like he could just be there for a long-ass time, and he could end up – like, it's not out of the realm of possibility for me that one day we're going, Mike Vrabel is the longest-tenured coach in the NFL, right, like with the Titans.
Yeah.
He's that good. And it's very clear that he's that good. I don't see any path for the Titans to be relevant here outside of, like, and I think that he's too good of a coach where they'll bottom out, you know, like, they're just going to be one of those teams that's kind of stuck, sort of a little bit like Seattle is, I think, in terms of not being able to be bad enough to get up to the top. Thank God they got the Broncos pick, but whatever. I want to do the Texans thing with you, but I'm going to close on that. But since we're talking about coaches, is there a coach in the should they, shouldn't they realm of letting them go and moving off of them that you want to see go? Or, like, you can conversely, you can make this positive, or that a team should absolutely not fire?
If I'm thinking about it, I would – Cliff Kingsbury is a guy that's it's a tough situation. Just because – you know, you're not going to have Kyler. You extended him in the offseason. Like, what are you going to do? Do you allow Cliff to coach without Kyler and see what you look like? But he's clearly your future. But he's just one of those – he's in an odd situation because it's like you marry those two guys and somebody has to go. Yeah. Either Kyler or either Cliff. You got to make a decision because it's not working. It's clearly not working. And then for me, like, if who else? Who else is out there?
You
on
know
the
who my guy is?
Right
well,
now?
I think I think Dennis Allen's gone. Yeah, Ron Rivera's gone, right? Those two guys are definitely gone.
Okay.
Yeah, Salah. Yeah. That's a question mark guy.
I don't see how you, again, I understand the Jets. This was year two for Salah.
It's like, really early. I know.
It's so early, like, and they turned it around. I don't see how you let Salah go, and your issues, your greatest issues and woes were on the offensive side of the ball. You gotta allow him the opportunity to address that, like, and get that right. You get the quarterback situation right. The Jets, I clearly believe we all would agree that's a playoff team.
Yep. I just
you go to the Lions and say, hey, let us try to get Jared Goff. Give us, I don't know, like somebody.
They need somebody. And so, yeah, listen, they'll probably end up giving him one more year. But in the totality of things with Salah, I think that there were some things that got papered over with Zach Wilson's bad season. And we can all say Zach Wilson doesn't have it and he was dreadful and blah, blah, blah. I think they handled him as poorly as you could possibly handle a player, right? The up and down, and sometimes he's on the practice squad, and sometimes we're playing Joe Flacco instead of him because we're saying that he should be on the practice squad. Like, it was very strange. And then there were a lot of games situationally where I thought Salah was bad. I watched a lot of Jets this year. Like, I was very in on the Jets. It's not like this guy was helping the team from an offensive standpoint. And all of this is probably going to fall on, I think it's LaFleur's brother is their coordinator, or it's a LaFleur that's there. A lot's going to fall on his shoulders. They probably end up moving off of him. They go to a different coordinator. Fine. There was enough bad Salah this year that at least got my antennas up to go, I don't know. I don't know if he was a part of the solution. And people will go, the defense was good. Well, the defense is extremely talented. They have this awesome defensive line, and they got Sauce Gardner, and it was kind of impossible to miss on those guys. I wouldn't be heartbroken if I was a Jets fan if they thought there was someone else that was better than him. Like the coach that is definitely going to be available in a couple of, maybe today, is Lovie Smith. Where does that rank amongst the weirdest things that you've ever seen in football? Like a Texans team that just punted away the first overall pick because they were going for it on two at the end of the game. They convert a 4th and 20, something crazy. Like, that's got to be one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. I can't think of anything that is even comparable.
Well, I mean, you got to think about it. So for me, watching that ending, like, you got two teams that aren't trying to win. Like, the Colts aren't trying to win.
The Colts were forcing fumbles on their own team.
Yeah, like, the Colts aren't trying to win. You're not trying to win. You don't expect to get the Hail Mary. But the last thing you want to do is take a 2-14 team,
yeah,
and a 4-12 or whatever team into overtime. So you go for two. It's like, you know what, let's just go for two. Let's see. What, you're not really thinking you're going to get it. Everything just went wrong at the worst time. and when you don't want to win, you find a way to win accidentally. And it blew up. But I feel like the Houston Texans should be relegated. I mean,
yeah,
firing so of Coe and now Lovie Smith. I think Lovie Smith, even though this team wasn't, from a wins and loss perspective, they weren't good. They competed. Like, you didn't feel like it was just we expected them to lose games, but it was hard fought for a lot of teams.
Yeah,
they
hung around a lot.
They did. Now, and with the capital that they have, with the picks that they have, this is not a team that's going to be down in the dumps for a while. Like, I mean, I feel like with the right coach, obviously they've been – circling the wagon with Josh McCown, so it looks like they'll finally get their guy. Yeah, but we'll see.
All I know is that if a team trades up in front of them and takes either Stroud or Young, and one of those two guys turns out to be the next guy, this is going to be one of the most famous games in football history. Like, it's going to be referenced where every single time Bryce Young plays well, we're going to have the graphic right on Monday Night Football, and they're going to throw something up here and be like, and you'll recall the Davis Mills game. And it's like, it will live in infamy forever and ever and ever. And I tweeted this yesterday, but I truly believe it. I think that the Texans, if you just take out expectation, because always the worst seasons in sports are when you think your team is a championship winning team and then they turn out to be dreadful. But just from a fan experience standpoint, like, you're a Texans fan these last couple of years. Like, you go through all the Deshaun Watson stuff, and then this season you're in the preseason, you're going, well, maybe like Damon Pierce is going to be fun, and we got Stingley, and then both those guys get shut down to injury. Stingley Jr. has one interception. Pierce has, like, I don't know, a couple of decent games. I don't know what the fun was. Like, they had no fun all season long, and then you get to the end and then you blow the first overall pick. It's the season from hell. It's got to be the worst season. Like, if you were a fan of sports and you went, hey, we're gonna pay you money, but the more money you get is the worst of the caliber of the season, like, that would probably be at the very highest. Like, you'd get paid $1 million to watch that entire season start to finish again.
Yeah, it was bad. I don't like the firing of Lovie Smith, but again, it's not shocking to me because it's the Houston Texans.
Yeah. Ugh, what a moribund franchise. They should be a fun franchise, too. Like, they should be in Texas. Should be fun. Should be cool. And it's like, no, it's the opposite. Nothing good about it. Greg Jennings, yeah. I'm glad you're back. It's been too long. So many, like, breaks in the schedule here. But, yeah, now we're here. It's playoff time. So, yeah, every Monday we'll be breaking it down. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Absolutely. Have a good one. And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, buddy. I thought that had passed. I never know what to do with it. I know that's like such
I only said because we haven't spoken.
I know. Yeah. It's just like, you. What are you supposed to do with it? You know, like, when do you decide it's over? So it is like, you don't talk to somebody. So, like, if I hadn't spoken to Greg in like 2 months, I see him and he's like, I feel like a jerk now. He's like, Happy New Year, by the way. I'm like, oh, sorry. Sorry, Greg. That's my mistake. My bad. Anyway, I say that the first week after New Year's is the time.
Yeah, I think 7 days.
Yeah, like the first week. Now we're in, this is just
like, January 9.
I think now saying Happy New Year to someone, not Greg, obviously I'm not sewering the guest we just had on, but yeah, it's kind of a showboaty move later. And it's actually kind of rude because you remind people that all the nice holiday stuff is over. Now you're just, you know, now you're not holiday chubby. You're just chubby.
It's like almost sarcastic.
Like, yeah. Like you're not, you're just tired. You're in it. You're in the thick of things. Like you're not, there's no refreshing time coming up around the corner unless you're like Ben Ennis, who's, you know, flying away to Mexico after the weekend.
Mexico.
Yeah, no.
He's in Mexico.
Everybody's going to Mexico with me. I'm the only one who can't afford it at the station. I got to get a
rest. Another cannot.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't deserve any money.
Okay, dude. Yeah. All the work I do.
You deserve nothing. Anyway, it's time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. So, yeah, no Pete today. We got Simon. You know what? I actually realized that I've been saying your last name wrong the whole time I've known you when I heard your voicemail the other day.
Oh, really? Yeah. Douglas.
I know. I've been saying dog. Because everybody calls you like...
I know. I get dog. I get dogless. That's cool.
I know.
That's fine. I would have figured as a fellow like Latvian Canadian, I know. But that's okay.
Two Latvians in there. Okay.
I know.
Stew.
Yes. My dad was pumped when he heard that I was going on the radio with another Latvian guy.
Absolutely, as he should be.
Yeah.
This is exactly what's happening here.
And I used to live in Lithuania.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, so let's
full
go.
Circle
Baltic,
moment.
But yeah, you're not, state,
no,
up.
But that's the thing.
I know, it's not Latvia, but...
No, but that's the thing. It's like, you're on board time.
I know. It's close. It's close.
The second I meet another Latvian Canadian guy, you're
Oh, I know. I'm cut.
You are out of here. You get shot out of here in a rocket.
Yeah,
you're
going
to have guys going to be falsifying papers back here. It's going to go down. Anyway, this is the time for action topic today, okay? I'm going to do these bets throughout the week, and we'll go through Saturday. There's only... This is a weird schedule. Like, do you guys notice that? Because I'm used to the wild card game, like wild card Saturday, and then wild card Sunday. This year, it's one game on Saturday, three games on Sunday, one game on Monday.
Two games on Saturday.
Two games on Saturday?
Yeah. 4-8, I think.
So it's two
games on Saturday.
Okay,
I only have
in front of me the Chargers-Jaguars game.
Well, your Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I know. Like, I don't have a line for that anyway. Yeah, I forgot, actually, of course. No, you know what sucks, though, too, is that Seahawks game is like, early. They were like, this is the trash game.
Exactly.
Seahawks are the trash.
The
I'm like, ouch.
Yeah.
It was true. But how come the Dolphins aren't the trash game? They're the trash game on the Sunday, but the Saturday game is the trashier of the games.
Yeah.
I just don't have that line up in front of me. Do you guys have that line?
Yeah, it's Chargers minus one right now.
No, I have the Chargers minus one. I don't have the Seahawks game.
Oh, no. Seahawks is Niners minus 10.
Niners minus 10.
Niners minus 10.
Wow. Can I tell you something right now?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Dude.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Seahawks, Mark Poffo. It's a divisional game.
In division, baby.
Yeah, divisional game. Mark Poffo.
No, honest to God, though, they couldn't move the ball against that Rams team. The Niners
are going to choke them.
Yeah, Nick Bosa is going to have a lot of sacks in that game.
Here's my take. Watching Sunday, I was trying to think of like, hey, what did I learn from...
That's the question. The question of the day today, Simon, is was there anything that happened over the weekend on Sunday that like really changed, or Saturday, that changed your mind about how you're going to bet?
So here's my take. Too many playoff teams.
Well, yeah.
Just because like... We could do without the Seahawks, and we could do without the Dolphins. The fact that they're both coming in as double-digit dogs.
But
like,
if we had Lions and Steelers.
I know, it would have been better.
It would have been good.
Still, so what would the number have been on those, you think? Still double-digit dogs? Or are the Dolphins and the Seahawks just like everybody's out on them?
Steelers-Bills would not be 10.5.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
I think that'd be like 7.5, 8.5. Steelers should be getting a couple more points than the Dolphins. Like, again, the Dolphins are probably going to play Skylar Thompson.
Yeah.
That's going to be an unwatchable game.
No,
like, as you said, that's going to be like...
It's going to be like the Bills and the Patriots.
No, football starts at 4:40, unless you're a Bills or Dolphins fan on Sunday.
Take the early afternoon Sunday, get your errands done.
Sleep in.
I'm just telling you that Seattle and Pete Carroll has a very good record against Kyle Shanahan, and Kyle Shanahan is generally pretty overrated. And then I'm not going to dismiss the possibility of Brock Purdy in his first meaningful game not playing incredibly well. The Niners have had a nice schedule. I think the Niners will win, but I'm telling you that there is something, there's enough things here that's not as much of a write-off game to me. Those two teams have history. It just...
10's a lot, man.
10's a lot.
That's a
for
big
that game.
Number.
Anyway, it just... Keep your eyes out. And again, Niners fans, if you win, congrats. You beat the team that people thought were going to have the third worst record in the NFL this year by Vegas odds. But if Seattle wins... Fold your franchise again.
You're just playing with house money here, right?
Full house money.
Fan?
There's nothing. There's nothing a Niners fan could say to me where I'd be like, oh, that makes me sad. Like, no, there's nothing. There's nothing. Anyway, the team for me is the Chargers. I think
yeah.
that
yeah. you were on this last week too, the Chargers.
No, I liked the Chargers, and I was fully in on they were the value team, and for this reason, like you played the Jags, and if you like, you got to look at it through the lens of what's the smarter future bet to make based on who your opponents are going to be and what the odds are. Like, is it better just to bet week to week to week, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the Chargers, the way that they started, guys, and Mike Williams getting hurt and Joey Bosa getting hurt, maybe both guys play, maybe, okay? The Mike Williams one looked way more serious. The shot of him going to the tunnel was like guys helping carry him.
Yeah.
I think that they screwed up their mojo. And then, like, they tried to win that game against Denver, and then they lost to Denver. So it was like you had the worst of both worlds, where you came out, you tried to make a statement of, hey, we're going to roll into the playoffs, and then the worst two things happened. You got hurt, and you lost, and Russell Wilson lit you up. Yeah. And I just think that maybe their confidence is a little shaken. So the Jags, I don't trust Jacksonville, especially given what we saw from Trevor Lawrence. I would be loving to bet against the Chargers if they were playing anybody else this weekend now, but... Yeah. They're the only team that, like, changed my opinion. Maybe a little bit the Cowboys.
The Cowboys, yeah, because, yeah.
Did anybody change your guys' mind? Like, Dolphins, completely unbettable. I'm going to bet the Bills, especially if it's Skyler.
I think I'm with you on the Jags a little bit. What we saw yesterday, especially from Trevor Lawrence, too, is kind of like, maybe they're just one step away from the big moment, you know? Like, maybe they're just, like, a playoff game away, like, okay, get in there, maybe you lose to the Chargers, and then next year you end up playing a lot better. But yeah, Jags yesterday, I was kind of in on them. I'm like, okay, maybe they could win a playoff game, maybe even two, maybe an upset, but no, I think the Chargers are going in there and smacking them. By the way, Kyle Shanahan against Pete Carroll is 4-10 in his career.
So
just,
I'm saying.
Just a little bit of context.
Look, I just looked at Boffo right away. It's like, Boffo and I are, here's the thing. You know I'm not going to bet the Seahawks.
Yeah.
I will absolutely not bet my own team in a playoff game. Like, there's no way in hell. There's no way. So I could have a benefactor that's like, I'm putting the money down on your behalf, and I would decline. Like, I would say thank you, but no thank you. Please donate that money to a charity. Kyle Shanahan, 4-10 against Pete Carroll is a real thing. I've said this division is very much a rock, paper, scissors weird thing where McVay has always owned Pete Carroll, but then Pete Carroll beat him twice this year, so I don't know. And then the Niners have kind of been owned by Pete Carroll. A lot of that was the Russell Wilson era, but no, I'm just saying.
Not this year, though.
That 10 points is a mighty line for Brock Purdy and a head coach that just can't beat Pete Carroll. Just saying. Anyway.
It is a mighty line. I'll give you that.
So, Simon, was there any for you that, you know, like there's one team that you thought...
Cowboys is a good one, honestly. Yeah. Like, I think that they were trying to win for a chunk of that game, at least. Like, trying to get something going. That was a pretty bad loss. And, like, I think people all season have been talking about, like, oh, like, what if Brady and the Bucks get it going? Like, I don't know. Dallas going into Tampa?
First losing season of Brady's career.
I know. That's insane.
Yeah. That was pretty nuts. Anyway, that game to me is like, I'll probably take the Bucks and the points. Yeah.
That's the thing, right? You take the points. They might not win, probably. But like they're going to be dogs at home with Brady in the playoffs.
This has Dallas going in and choking to Tom Brady in the fourth quarter final drive.
Written all over it.
Okay. And then all of a sudden the Cowboys become like a Sean Payton potential team because they're going to have another...
But I'm kind of stepping on tomorrow. Maybe we will end up doing a pick or a prop or something tomorrow and switch it up. But like if I was doing fishy lines today, the fishiest line is that the Cowboys are favored by 3.
Yeah.
Like it just is. It just doesn't make any sense, which makes me feel like the Cowboys are going to win that game and Vegas knows a thing or two. Because like to me, you could flip this line and I wouldn't have batted an eye.
Oh yeah, not at all.
So yeah. Anyway, it's a little strange. Anyways, quick break. Let's come back and let's hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590. 590, the fan.
Okay, it's what we missed. I kind of jinxed Simon during the break. I was like, you're doing good today. It's your first show. No, you're doing great. And now he's like, thanks. And he's going to choke hard.
No.
What did we miss?
So Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
The whole contract extension drama has continued. We have the audio from the Josh Lewinberg about Fred talking about
this is Fred speaking.
Yeah, it's Fred speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lewinberg reported that he turned down a $150 million contract. And that was just kind of a throwaway thing in a piece that was like a very spicy headline by my boy. First guy I ever did a podcast with in Toronto.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, first one.
Yeah. Horribly named Full Court Press.
Full Court Press.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, we did that and we were in college together. And yeah, like, listen, I actually thought my boy J.Lew made a pretty decent case about, like, the ways the Raptors have failed Fred. I would say that it's not a one-way thing, but whatever. That's the way that tweets go to get traction. But
yeah,
Fred addressed it. We'll play some of it here. I'm going to do a lot more of this tomorrow, by the way. Like, the Raptors are a huge story in the city. I wanted to do Leafs midseason grades. Like, I plan out my guests for the show, and yeah, we have Alex Wong tomorrow. Blake's coming back later in the week. Like, I've got plenty of Raptor stuff. We're trying to plan on some bigger Raptors names that we're really trying to kind of shake out for these next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, the Raptors are a really big story where they are right now. And like I said, the Scotty Barnes thing is not a nothing the way that some people try to make it seem.
Yep.
Like, Scotty Barnes getting into it with a teammate in front of everybody, it's not nothing. Like, stop pretending it is.
Yeah.
I don't, it doesn't need to be the world's biggest deal. Scotty Barnes went out there and had a good game, but it's not a nothing, just like all this Fred stuff is. And like, I said earlier in the show that this is a team that is kind of pulling in multiple different directions, and I don't think that guys feel that the ground is very stable beneath them. They've got a coach who's been very demanding. They've got players who've been overtaxed. They don't know if they're making the playoffs or not. Some of those guys don't know if they're going to be here. For some guys, it probably feels like a bit of a wasted season. Anyways, Fred, after it was reported by Josh, addressed it. This was what he had to say about the $114 million that he was allegedly turned down during the offseason.
I was never made a formal offer. I think we all understand what comes with the contract extension due to the CBA. If you understand how the cap works and how the contracts work, there's a two-year anniversary that sparks the discussion of taking an extension. There was never a formal offer made. It was a mutual decision by both sides that the smart thing to do would be to wait it out. There was no rush, given that I can still sign the extension all the way throughout the end of the season. I also have a player option in my contract this summer, and we can deal with that at the end of the season. And I also am on the books for next year.
Okay, so anyway, he goes on to say a little bit more. Maybe we'll play more tomorrow, depending on it. I actually want to play more from his J.J. Redick interview because I haven't really had a chance to get to that. That was the main reason that I wanted to have Alex in the first place, and Blake, who knows him pretty well. I trust Josh, okay? And, and like, he can say all this stuff about the formal thing or the mutual decision, but it's like, yeah, dude, pretty sure if that number came up that the Raptors were saying, we can give this to you now, and he was like, I'm going to bet on myself because I'm Fred VanVleet. And he could get a little bit more money. And he never saw a scenario where his value would drop off to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I think he said it. He's like, I knew I had my player option. I was set up for some security if something really bad happened. But I was willing to roll the dice that I could get a little bit more than $114 million. But I'm sorry, this whole, like, this is parsing by an athlete, clearly, about the whole lack of formal offer. Like, it's very clear to me, anyways, that if Fred wanted the $114 million from the Toronto Raptors this year, it was available.
Yeah,
and that the quote-unquote mutual decision is like the Raptors saying, yeah, sure, we're cool to wait, too. I don't think that these teams ever foresaw this scenario where things were going to go this south this badly. But my understanding of things is that, I've said this before, and Fred ended up kind of indicating as much throughout that podcast, but I said it with Grange, that there had been a little bit of stuff percolating below the surface with Fred now for a little while.
Yeah.
And it seems like he is quite upset with how much he's had to play, that they haven't developed other guys, and then, but also at the same time wants the ball more. Like, he doesn't like his role. He doesn't like his minutes. He doesn't like that he's not healthy. He doesn't like that he's not winning. Like, he's just not a happy guy right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's
not
in a good place.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the Raptors do with that. I think his value should remain high. Mm-hmm. I still think that the Dallas Mavericks should be doing whatever they possibly can to try to dump our Latvian boy Bertans onto the Raptors' lap and the Frankie Smokes contract with like a bunch of picks.
I mean, the Mavs have been dying for a secondary ball.
I know, that's
forever.
It. A guy who can play off ball with Luka. Yeah. And it's like, you basically get a different Jalen Brunson, but a guy that I think is a more reliable three-point shooter, hopefully, if he's at his best. Anyways, the Fred thing is it's not going anywhere.
Well, all this Fred stuff, too, is like kind of stuff that you've been saying all season, is like the vibes on the team are just weird.
They are.
You know,
and he's like one of their leaders.
Yeah, you're hearing whatever reported. Yeah. Fred saying another thing. Even the like Thad and Scotty stuff that you guys talked about in the open. Like, it's not a huge deal, but it's also the like it's just weird.
No,
it's just a weird.
It's not good, man. The Raptors situation is bad, and I hate it because I think they're going to win these next two games against Charlotte.
You're terrified, eh? That they're going to go 2-0?
Well, what I really don't want is for people to go, oh, well, there's actually so much of the season left and their schedule is fine. It's like, no.
This is the turning point.
The point of this team is not that they're completely broken in a way, because I actually think they have awesome pieces that they can just kind of still build around on the fly.
Yeah.
But no, to me, it's pretty clear that they cannot, from an asset management standpoint, go through this and stand pat and have their team get the record run up and end up in the middle of the pack and risk losing out on what is a very special top of the draft. Mm-hmm. It would be completely idiotic. Anyway, we ran out of time for all the other things, but I will just say that the LeBron thing was super annoying.
Him
doing an interview where it was like nothing burger, and then him tweeting at Sam Amick in a trap, trapping poor Sam Amick.
Yeah, hey, my patience is
classic, classic LeBron, just capping the whole way. LeCap, Beethoven, LeCap. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast, leave a 5-star review. Really helps me out, and we'll be back tomorrow.